Okay, thank you. Well, the starting point of our investigation was the recovery of a so-called ferromanganese crust from the bottom of the equatorial Pacific Ocean. And so Kni et al. Analyzed this crust sample in the year 2004 and found a significant abundance increase of the radioisotope iron-60 at a depth corresponding to an age of about 2.2 mega years ago. This is the signal. And the signal was then later confirmed by Fitoussi et al. In the year 2008. So what's so special about this iron-60? Well, first of all, it is, of course, produced during the late shell burning phase in massive stars and predominantly released by core collapse supernovae. Then it has a low terrestrial background. And finally, its half-life is sufficiently low so that it can travel significant distances through the ISM, thus being detectable by its beta-minus decay via cobalt-60 and the corresponding significant gamma-ray line emission. So, and we believe that there's a link between this iron-60 anomaly and recent supernovae near Earth that also contributed to the formation of the local bubble. And as you all know, the local bubble is our galactic habitat. It is a low-density region of the interstellar medium. It is partially filled with hot, soft X-ray emitting gas. And in fact, it was recently shown that it is responsible for about 60% of the 1 over 4 keV flux in the galactic plane, which is, of course, a bold confirmation of its existence, which has long been debated. And its size is about 200 parsec in the galactic plane and about 600 parsec perpendicular to it, so that it has been suggested that it has actually become a galactic chimney. And its widely accepted origin is that it was created by several nearby supernova explosions in the last about 10 mega years. And however, there's this so-called missing gun problem, so there is no young stellar cluster could be found inside its current boundaries. In order to overcome this problem, Fuchs et al. Analyzed a volume complete sample of stars, so within a sphere with a diameter of 400 parsec, he analyzed this is centered at the solar system. He analyzed the stars and determined the real velocities by analyzing Hipparchus and arrival catalog data. And they then selected only those 79 B stars that are concentrated in both in real and in velocity space. And then they extrapolated the trajectories back in space and time, and by applying an initial mass function in order to determine the number of supernovae in the past, they also determined the explosion sites from these trajectories and the explosion times from their main sequence lifetimes by assuming that all these stars in the cluster were born at the same time. So by the way, this cluster age was determined by putting these deradinate cluster stars into a Keller magnitude diagram and then determining the turn-off point from isochrones. And they then found out that the association had actually entered the present local bubble volume rather off-center. As you see here, this is the present volume about 10 to 15 mega years ago. And since then, about 14 to 20 supernova explosions should have occurred. And also the corresponding energy input was found to be consistent with the current local bubble size. And this scenario was then further tested by means of three-dimensional hydrodynamical simulations which were able to match several observables. But however, one can now take into account this as an additional constraint, this ferromanganese crust measurements. And this is what we have done. So first of all, my colleague Jenny Feige did an analytical study by using the Fuchs et al. Data and a supernova model by Kahn, and by this way she was able to obtain a good agreement between these crust measurements and her model results. However, the results of such analytical models should not be overestimated, since these models suffer from some severe restrictions. For example, the ambient medium has here to be either homogeneous or, in this case, to follow a power law density distribution. Also, the external pressure must be small compared to the pressure in the local bubble volume. The external medium has to be taken constant for all, but the very first supernova explosion, which is, of course, not the case in reality, and turbulent mixing as well as mass loading are not incorporated here. So the only way to overcome all these shortcomings is by means of performing three-dimensional high-resolution numerical simulations. And the best way to do this is also to include a self-consistently evolved turbulent ISM as a typical background medium. So this is what we have done. Our workhorse was the Ramses code, which has already been the topic today. And so we modified and extended this code in order to perform our Mesoscale ISM simulations. We included, or we modified the star formation module by including an initial mass function. We spawn stars whenever a certain density and temperature criterion is fulfilled. These stars are then spawned at galactic rate and are treated as collisionless particles. We then included feedback from stellar winds and from the supernovae. We included a solar wind bubble. We included self-gravity of the gas and galactic gravitational potential, as well as heating and cooling processes, assuming that the gas has solar metallicity everywhere in our computational box. We, in fact, also created an interface between the photoionization code Cloudy and Ramses. And furthermore, we also had to include this most probable stellar trajectories, that is the most probable supernova explosion sites, which created the local bubble and which we trace back to the upper Centaurus Lupus and lower Centaurus Crux subgroups of the Scorpius Centaurus Association. So this is an overview of our model parameters. We ran two different types of models, models with an homogeneous background medium where we neglect the turbulent multiphase nature of the ISM, and of course a model with an inhomogeneous background medium. So as a further boundary condition, we also included the loop one super bubble. This has to be done since there seems to be an interaction between our neighboring super bubble and the local bubble, which has been observed in ROSAT observations. And I don't want to go through this, but we essentially used the method developed by Fuchs et al., but now applied it to our loop, to two different moving groups, namely the Trimplatane and the Vela OB2 association, which we have identified to have harbored this loop 1 supernova, supernova progenitor stars. And this is now a circling computational cube. So these are the supernova explosion sites of the which created the local bubble, and the blue dots are the loop 1 explosion sites. The cross is the location of our solar system, which resides at this, the origin of the coordinate system. The x-axis points into the direction of the galactic center, the y-axis into the direction of galactic rotation, and the z-axis in the direction of the galactic north pole. So how did we calculate now the amount of the supernova-released iron 60 that arrives on Earth? Well, we had to fit here iron 60 yields, which depend on the star's initial masses. So we took several recent stellar evolution models and calculated an average of these models, which gives us for a certain initial mass the corresponding iron 60 yield. We then treated this spatiotemporal evolution of the concentration of iron 60, that is the chemical mixing process, as an advection diffusion process of passive scalars. Passive because there should actually be no back reaction of the iron 60 concentration on the flow. And we then implemented also the radioactive decay of iron 60, which is of course based on this lastly revised half-life data. So how did we proceed step by step? First, we forced maximum grid refinement at the region of our solar system, since in such Godunov schemes, the fluxes are defined at the cell centers. We had to average these fluxes within the 8 innermost grid cells, creating us this virtual red cell here. And we then computed the time-integrated flux, that is the so-called fluence by this equation, where the delta T is the last simulation time step. We then used this fluence to calculate the surface density of atoms deposited on Earth at time T before present. Using this equation, we assumed here that the fallout happens isotropically, which was recently found to be a good approximation. And furthermore, we had to include a certain iron 60 survival fraction, since not all the iron 60, which we consider here to be condensed into dust grains, actually survives its way from its origin or from its source to the location of the Earth's orbit. This has to be taken into account by this dust factor. This has been estimated to be about 1%. Then also we have to include an uptake factor, which takes into account that not all the iron 60 that is distributed over the Earth's surface actually finds its way into the ferromanganese crust. So this is actually only 6% when using the Kni et al. Estimate based on isotropic measurements, or about 5% as a lower limit based on more recent estimates. And finally, we obtain the number density of RN60 for each crust layer by summing over this, all these sigma t's within the corresponding time intervals and then divided through the thickness of the layer. And this can then be finally related to the density of stable iron using this special value for the corresponding crust sample. So this is now a movie of the evolution of the gas column density distribution for our homogeneous background medium model. In model A, we took a background medium something like the warm ionized medium of the classical three-phase model, and in model B, something like the warm neutral medium. And it turns out that these two super bubbles form almost at the same time, and they are then subject to a variety of instabilities. And the final sizes, which are also shown here, are given by these numbers. It turns out that they only poorly match the observed extensions, which is not surprising since we haven't added any neighboring clouds or vertical pressure gradients, so there should also be a larger vertical extent. But however, this extension is not so crucial for this RN60 transport modeling as long as our solar system resides within the local bubble interior already at the right time. So this is now the evolution of the RN60 mass density distribution of model A and B. As you can see, inhomogeneities, which are created from these individual supernova explosions, are fastly smoothed out due to these turbulent shear flows, which are nothing else than the injection of turbulence created or injected by the supernova remnants that run into the local bubble or the super bubble's outer shell, gets asymmetrically reflected and thus create a high amount of vorticity in the bubble interior. We have estimated this time scale of mixing to be lesser than about 1 mega year, and it's not surprising that the RN60 is very soon homogenized, since this last local bubble supernova in our model occurred about 1.5 mega years ago. So we then also analyzed the entropy or the individual supernova blast waves by looking at entropy maps of our model. This is now the local interstellar fluence as a function of time. So each signal is associated with a certain supernova event, of course. This is the total interstellar fluence. We then repeated the simulation, but now assigned a passive scalar to each individual supernova event. So we obtained here this more colorful representation where each color refers to a particular supernova released RN60 material. And it turns out, when now comparing this to the crust measurements, first of all, I must add that we have here three different times of signals, which are all embedded into some sort of background noise, which is of course created by these turbulent motions within the local bubble volume. And we have of course first this high and sharp sawtooth wave, which represent the Zetov-Taylor phase of the supernova remnant. And then we have also, after many of these sawtooth wave, weaker signals, which are also more extended, which are created by the reflected blast waves from the outer supershell. We call them supernova echoes. And we then have at the beginning of the signal also a broad signal, which is created by the arrival of the supershell itself. So this is a magnification of this region. And all the pulses entrain also previously released RN60 that has not yet decayed. This is the reason why we have this multiple peaks here, several colors at the same position. And when now comparing this to these measurements, to the crust measurements, we see that here this maximum at 2.2 mega years is produced by supernova number 14 and 15, as well as the reflected shock wave. So how does model... Yeah, we have here this additional peak. We had this additional peak, so this is of course not observed. So how does model B perform here? Well, this is again the profile, and here the comparison to the crust measurements would give a very good fit of the observed distribution. So here, however, this is a totally different process that produces the maximum. In this case, it is the local bubble supershell itself that already incorporates the signals or the contributions of the supernova number 1 to 15. And finally, maybe I have some seconds to also introduce my inhomogeneous medium model. So we took here our our mesoscale simulation of the galactic disk. We started with an initial distribution, which of course collapses due to the imbalance of heating and cooling processes, and also due to the absence of any feedback processes, which are then later introduced. Since the disk collapses, that the density rises, the temperature falls, the regions can spawn new massive stars, which then live their main sequence lifetime by blowing stellar winds, and then finally enter life as a supernova explosion, which then lead to a rebuild up of the galactic disk. And after about 180 mega years, we obtain filling factors that are consistent with observations. And this is now our typical background medium for our third simulation. So here we launched the local bubble in this more suitable environment. We have searched for an extended region that remains sufficiently thin, at least for a few mega years, and also a region that is not that features not too strong vertical gas flows, so that we don't get too much loss of the iron-60 material, and also a region that has enough cold gas available for the star cluster. For giving the star cluster a plausible origin, it is seen that the local bubble, which forms here, and this is the XZ plane, develops internal structures after about 8 mega years, and the present local bubble extension is in very good agreement with observations. However, in this model, these transient clouds, which are actually the molecular clouds in the ISM, lead to the fact that our loop one super bubble remains underdeveloped here, because exactly in that location where the loop one super bubble should form, there are these transient molecular clouds, so there is no interaction shell here, but however still a resistance due to the presence of these clouds. And this is now finally the RN60 mass density distribution for this model, and it turns out that since we only attribute this passive scalar field to the local bubble and loop one super bubble, our models only always give the lower limit of the RN60 content of the local interstellar medium. And this is finally now the comparison to the GRASP measurements, also showing a very good agreement. Here, of course, the supernova number 14 and 15, as well as their reflected shocks, are responsible for the maximum at 2.2 mega years. We have here a signal broadening, since the numerical resolution is here 4 times lower, and this also not only the spatial, but also the time resolution. Therefore, we have this fat tail here in the signal, but generally the agreement is very good here, and this brings me to my summary, and thank you for your attention.
Okay, we have time for one question, one burning question.
Hi, so this was, I guess I may have missed it if you went too quickly or something, but I guess you covered a lot of stuff. So the ratio of iron-60 to iron-56 in the actual galaxy is about 10 to the minus 7. If you just take a IMF and take your stars and get that, do you actually reproduce that? And then what do you get when you do it in the Earth's crust and how much enters? So how do you...
You mean a simulation of the whole galactic disk?
No, but just not entering the Earth, but just taking an IMF and calculating how much of iron-60 to iron-56 you get after a certain amount of time when it's in steady state. Have you tried that? Do you get the right galactic value as 10 to the minus 7 at all?
No, we haven't tried it, no.
Because that might be a good test to make sure that it actually works. Then you want to see how much of that you can get inside the Earth's this thing and try to see how you get that.
Yeah.
So did you calculate that ratios in different places, like the iron-60 to iron-56, and make sure
No,
that
in this study we were all only interested in the local bubble, so... We haven't tried any other places.
Okay, you could easily do that. That would be a good test.
Maybe I can add that this signal was not only measured in the ferromanganese crust, but also in several other terrestrial and even extraterrestrial archives. So even in lunar rocks, and we have also compared our numerical model to this lunar soil measurements. Of course, on the moon, the situation is slightly different. Here you have no time-resolved measurements. So we had to integrate our fluence profile, and by assuming an uptake factor of 100%, which is suitable for the moon due to the absence of an atmosphere. So all of the amount of iron 60 distributed over the moon also arrives into the lunar rocks. This is okay. And by slightly increasing this dust fraction, we have used 1% in all our models, increasing it to 1.6%, we can very nicely reproduce this new lunar rock measurement. So this is an additional constraint for the model. Yeah.
So let's wrap up there. Let's thank Michael and all of the speakers. Thank you.